Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, folks. Good evening, wherever you're located. Welcome to Right from the Left Coast. My name is Linda. I'm your host today, and I'm coming to you from the Pacific Coast. Oceanside, it's gorgeous. 66 degrees, sunny, blue skies, amazing. That's all we got going because, believe me, exactly. Thanks, Mike, for the sound check. And, yeah, Yola's in. Hey, Yo or Nick. I hope Yo's feeling better. Thanks for joining us. I know that others will come in. It's been pretty crazy. I have to pay for my shows via Skype, so it's kind of strange. But anyway, I want to welcome everybody and those listening by other methods. And thank God that everybody's feeling better. I'm hoping Bill's okay. I know that usually they're in here. We've been praying for him every day, so that's a good thing. And I've got a jam-packed show. A lot of stuff to go on. It's been crazy. We are brought to you by www.patriotfamilies.com. That's patriotfamilies with a YS.com. And I want to remind people quickly, and I will at the end, hot seat, left is never right, Thursdays, 8 p.m. Eastern. And that will be a little bit, about half an hour after Terry's show, because Terry's 6 p.m. Eastern. She does an hour and a half. So we want to tune into hot seat and Terry tomorrow. And everything's good. I can make those. I think there's other things. I don't remember what the meetings are, but we'll get to that in a minute. And thanks for joining, FT. Good to see you. Yola, good for you. Okay, we're going to get some more people in here. And I just want to start with some scripture. Shall we? Yes, we shall. I need it because my martini ain't going to help me as much as God is. Believe me, there's so much to talk about. Unbelievable stuff going on. And I want to get to it before my guest caller calls in and we can do questions and answers. I've got a lot of stuff to cover today, but I want to go with the gospel according to Matthew. This is chapter 3, 13 through 17. Then Jesus came from Galilee to the Jordan to John to be baptized by him. John would have prevented him saying, I need to be baptized by you, and do you come to me? But Jesus answered him, let it be so now, for thus it is fitting for us to fulfill all righteousness. Then he consented. And when Jesus was baptized, immediately he went up from the water, and behold, the heavens were opened to him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and coming to rest on him. And behold, a voice from heaven said, this is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. These are the messages of the Lord, and thank God for that. And I want to go to, before I get to the water problems in California, which are many, I want to get into a little bit more of American patriotism by my friend Bradley Dean, who also has his show. He's a great spreader of the truth. He speaks to children. He goes to every high school in America where they allow him to do so and talks about patriotism, the Constitution, and God. And so we will do a little bit on that because he also has biblical references in this particular piece. And later on, we will be taking calls, but I want to get through these. This is Bradley Dean, the answer to America's dilemma is resolved. There are men and women in the thousands who have fought, bled, and died to give us the freedoms we now possess. They are 6 feet underground. The truth of the matter is these veterans fought, bled, and died fighting against the ideologies of the American people are tolerating through this current administration. If the American people were truly thankful for their freedoms, they would not tolerate crime in their representatives whatsoever. Article 2, parentheses, Section 4 of the United States Constitution. Currently, we are out on tour in California doing television, radio, and tea parties. During my last Tea Party event in Southern California, I noticed a recurring theme going throughout the speakers. What the left is doing, what the socialists are doing, what the Democrats are doing, and what the immoral are doing, which, by the way, all are one and the same, And as usual, when I had the opportunity to do my best in setting the record straight by using the Bible and our founding documents, I had to ask the audience, how many constitutions do we have? And they replied, one. I then said, there is one constitution, then why are you complaining about what the left is doing? For if everyone here were doing the right thing all of the time, there would be no left to complain about. And everyone seemed to agree. President Harry Truman said the fundamental basis of this nation's laws was given to Moses on the Mount. The fundamental basis of our Bill of Rights comes from the teaching we get from Exodus and St. Matthew, from Isaiah and St. Paul. I don't think we emphasize that enough these days. If we don't have a proper fundamental moral background, we will finally end up with a totalitarian government which does not believe in rights for anybody except for the state. One of America's founding presidents, John Adams, stated concerning the two-party system, there is nothing I dread so much as a division of the republic into two great parties, each arranged under its leader and converting measures in opposition to each other. When the Tea Party was talking of the left and the socialists, the Democrats and the immoral, I said that I did not know that our representatives had the right to break the laws of our constitutional republic, which God gave, Exodus 18:21. I said, when you are talking of the left, socialists, the Democrats, and the immoral, you need to begin to call them out for who and what they really are, namely criminals. That would be 1 John 3:18. Friends, government's purpose is to ensure our rights. Rights God gave, Declaration of Independence, in parentheses, not to strip them away under another party name or party guise. What it really comes down to is this. If you really knew the price paid for your freedoms, John 3:16, you would live to magnify the laws our veterans died to give us. Justice is the guardian of liberty, 2 Corinthians 3:17. We are not going to have liberty without justice, Isaiah 42:1-4. And until you know what the law says through our founding documents, and until you know what the law says in God's word, Exodus 20, you cannot bring forth judgment to establish righteousness, peace, and resolve. We the people need to begin to magnify the laws against all that would attempt the sacrifice given, Romans 3:31. This is not going to happen until you see what was sacrificed on your behalf to give you what it is that you have. Herein lies the heart of the issue. Friends, God gave his law because he loves, and we can see this through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ on the cross, which covered sin through his blood to establish his law towards, maybe against, would be a better word here, sin. If I am born of God, then I am by his spirit, John 3:3, Romans 5:5, going to love what he loves and am going to hate what he hates. And I am not going to love my brothers and sisters the way that I should until I first love God with my whole heart, my whole soul, mind, and strength, 1 John 5:2, Hebrews 1:8-9, Hebrews 10:16. And I am not going to love God until I see that he first loved me through his son's sacrifice, 2 Corinthians 5:15 and 1 John 4:19. Are you thankful for the sacrifice that has been given on your behalf, my friends? If you are, you can rest assured that you will not tolerate what offends God. And what offends God? That which put Christ on the cross. What put Christ on that cross? Sins men have committed. And what is sin? The transgressions of God's law. Remember, that's God's law, not man's law. And what did love do to cover man's transgression? Love sacrificed by Christ fighting, bleeding, and dying on Calvary to redeem men through his blood back unto the Father, John 15:13. So if we as a people see the price paid for our freedoms, there will be no room to tolerate anything that would attempt to desecrate that which God gave us through his son, Jesus Christ, in the spiritual, or in what men have died to give us through their sacrifice in the natural. Until America sees the price paid for their freedoms, they will not live for what men have died to give. Herein lies the resolve. And that, my friends, is from my friend Bradley Dean. Hi, Rod. Welcome to the show. That particular Hi, Nun. Welcome to the show. That particular piece was emailed to me by Bradley Dean. I will have him back on the show whenever time permits for him. And I want to go into, I hope you enjoyed that because I sure did. He quotes scripture, and I love Bradley Dean. The man is a great Christian. I will be taking calls. I've only got about 10 or 11 minutes, and I want to try to get through some of these items because we have the California drought system, and our headline the other day, 4 days ago on the UT, water deliveries axed. If the drought persists in California, the state warns it will cut off distribution for the first time. So this is not a good thing. And this is from Sacramento. In an unprecedented move, state water officials Friday announced that they will be forced to turn off the tap to hundreds of farms and cities this year in California unless snow-packing storms arrive in the coming weeks to wash away the stubborn drought, which is also caused by the district of criminal freaks in the Senate, which would be, some would be Pelosi, Frankenstein, and Boxer. Yeah, those guys, when they try to protect the smelt. And we'll get that to that in a minute. However, most water agencies are planning to use reserves and other resources to help keep at least minimal amounts flowing in Southern California. Available supplies are sufficient to prevent rationing just for now. The state also issued an emergency directive to slow down releases from reservoirs along its major northern rivers, a rare step that will save water for next year, but also provide bare minimum protections for water quality and fish. The fish, I can't take it. They put fish above people. They do it all the time. And I think we have our friend on already. I'm going to pick this up. And I think that's Mr. Ken. Is that you?
That's me.
Hey, welcome to the show. We have quite a nice chat room. I don't know if you're in there or if Lynn's in there, but as a guest, so I don't know because I can't tell unless they use their Facebook names. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing great. Love that you're talking about the water crisis. I've been trying to get people to wake up about it for about since 2009.
Yes. Can you explain a little bit about what that was that you talked about the other day with Northern California saying they won?
Listeners. I mean, the fight about water in California goes all the way back to 1906, and the fight between a guy named Pinchot and a guy named John Muir, who you may have heard of.
Yes.
And the bottom line to it is that the North has water, the South doesn't. The North always felt that it was a cultural and civic center of California, and that San Diego and Los Angeles were these poor brethren, you know, kind of like thieves in the night in the South. And even when I was a kid growing up in San Diego, people used to fight about it.
My God. I mean, okay, because you were saying that there was, what was it, a law or was it some kind of a mandate or something where they get to run their hoses and we pay for it? How did that work?
Oh, well, no, in most of the Northern California, many of the Northern California cities, water is a flat fee. They don't charge you or meter your use. Imagine doing that down here.
Oh, my Lord. I mean, well, look, we live in a desert, so we have a problem. we have some problems. Okay.
Their answer is basically, then, why did you settle there?
Correct. You wanted, well, we could vacate and leave it to be a ghost state. I mean, I personally, at this point, I'm ready.
I know. There are several people who think that might be a truly wonderful thing to contemplate.
Well, unless it turns around or gets turned around or something. I mean, gosh only knows. But these articles, I might even, since you're here and we can go through the other items, I might save some of it. But they are putting fish above people. I mean,
You have to understand that the original legal case that caused all this was based on a lawsuit waged by the Sierra Club and the Natural Resources Defense Fund. And they started the case back in the late 80s. And it just finally made it after the millennium change. And it was determined that the long-tailed smelt was dramatically endangered. Well, the Endangered Species Act actually says that if the species is endangered, no amount of human cost, loss, or degradation may be considered. So they're not allowed to weigh human beings in the outcome. So all those people
gosh.
Have T-shirts that says, I'm a human, an endangered species, aren't actually too far off.
Exactly. Well, yeah, if you understand the tenets of the Earth Charter, yeah, absolutely. I mean, from what that's the way I understand it, and the environmental wackos. Like you said, it's their religion, although I call it a cult.
Well,
that's
remember, this was passed by environmental wackos called the Republican Party.
Okay.
This wasn't passed, by the way, in a democratic regime.
Okay, and the other thing that I don't know if you heard my piece on Bradley Dean, because he was actually saying the same thing you're saying right now. This two-party system, this right-left paradigm, as you know, and you talked about this at the meeting, which was the last of the, quote, Vista Tea Party Patriots meeting, and now we have the Our Republic. And you talked about what all the evils that the Republicans have done, and you went back in history about it, and things I didn't even know, naturally wouldn't know unless someone like you who does that particular research would enlighten us. So,
well, the other thing about it is that the Republicans started out a very, very socially active, very mm-hmm. pro-people, very pro-helping the poor party. In fact, they actually were what the Democrats like to call themselves today. And a lot of people don't know that. I mean, the word most often used for Republicans in the first 50 to 100 years of its existence was extremist.
Oh, well, so was Washington. He was considered
right. Well,
one, too.
You got to be wary. I mean, you know, poor old Boehner, you know, he's an extremist.
Yeah, right. Boehner's a socialist. I mean,
I know.
He's
joking
a turncoat.
Well, I don't know if he's a turncoat or not, but he is a Republican through and through. But the thing is he believes in the charter of civility, that there is a certain civility that must be shown, a certain respect of office, all of which I think is wonderful if the American populace and the political parties agree.
Well,
but if they
okay.
don't agree, the problem is that it becomes a nice excuse to not act.
Right. Well, here's my take on civility. there was not way too much, not too much civility was going on back when they were doing the Constitutional Convention, if I remember correctly. There was a lot of shouting going on. So especially when they were screaming about, oh, this person's, you know, they didn't want to pray with this guy because that person was a Mormon or that was a Quaker. And Samuel Adams just said, oh, my Lord, he says, I'm no bigot. I'll pray with any man. And they started praying for 2 hours. Well, you know, I mean, they had duels, for God's sakes. And where do you think that the phrase came from George Washington? Meet me on the battlefield of ideas. Boy, they had some knockdown dragouts. So,
absolutely.
Civility. And I think that's perfectly, for me, I don't care. Just, you know, don't stifle speech and don't, you know, stifle your enemies by going after them through the agencies. Like,
yeah.
And this administration is not the first to do it. I'm not saying that because I know better. And I have no love lost at this point for Bush and Cheney, so I'll leave it at that. But I do want to welcome everybody that's in there, and Bill came in also on the chat room, and anybody that wants to call in and ask questions. But I think what we were going to do was talk about things that was really, since we're on the right-left paradigm, you mentioned something we never got to go into called recreating 1776. Can you kind of explain that to me?
Well, yeah. The original founders were in a different, at the very least, mental place from our current political structures.
Okay.
So one of the things about 1776 is that there were no set examples. You couldn't say, well, this is like that or like this or like something else, because it hadn't happened yet.
Sure.
So the arguments they were having were fundamental and among the first time that
right.
people seriously undertook to invent a country, and to consider, hey, if this isn't given by the church and it isn't given by kingdom or feudal power structures,
sure,
what would a modern society look like? And they actually then got into fights about what they believed and what they considered straight up. I mean, I've in one of the Tea Party groups that I work in, one of our people is, and we share a lot about the views of atheists, because this person is not a believer in any form of spiritual being. And one of the things that's very interesting is that he started out by quoting Thomas Jefferson as a person who was not particularly a religious person. And I've had people quote him at me endlessly. And I thought it fun that if you go to his memorial in Washington,
right,
carved in the stone in his memorial is, I've sworn an oath to my God against every form of manipulation of the mind of man. And I have hundreds of letters where he talks about his belief in God. He just didn't believe in denominations.
Sure. Well, I think
he thought
that
all
later
the pernicious things that happen in our world happen because one group of people decides to unilaterally say, well, we're right.
Exactly. Yeah, I get that. I understand that.
Everyone else is dazed and confused.
Right, and that's where I think bigotry kind of creeps in. With people's, and we're all flawed human beings, as you know. You're a good spiritual man.
Which only means that I know better than anyone else just how screwed up I am.
Well, yeah, we can all, look, I can attest to that. My God, I fall short every day. That's why I get on my knees and pray. So,
amen.
And I try to read scripture, and thank God I'm going to church with you folks. I mean, it's just wonderful. These people are great. It's a great fellowship. We need to bring Father Tim up to speed on Agenda 21, but other than that, basically what I had learned through looking at original documents, et cetera, was that Jefferson, as he got older, I think he was getting a little closer, you know, to wanting to get into heaven now, you know, and so he, instead of saying in the year of our Lord, 18 whatever, he started writing in the year of our Lord Christ, 18 whatever. He actually, I think, was coming to the Lord. So, I mean, why would he write? And that's how they communicated.
Oh, I think you're right.
They didn't have e-books. They didn't have email. They didn't have telephones. So they were writing beautiful letters in beautiful script, you know, cursive.
Right.
And so if we as a people recreating this, since we already have the beautiful documents that should be held up. To me, when I look at the Bill of Rights, that's my Ten Commandments there, the Big Ten. Those are the unalienable rights that were spoken about in the Declaration.
Right.
In other words, according to M.C. Hammer, can't touch this, okay?
Yeah, right.
So, you know, because they're not ours. They're his. That's the Lord. So those are given. We're not going to negotiate those away. So we should guard them and be the good stewards, as pastors have told us, as even people who like environmental sanity, not the wacko things, you know, where they're making roundabouts for no reason, but being good stewards of everything. My God, we should be good stewards of his word. We should have charity in our hearts. But that doesn't mean that we should walk around like Mao and put guns to people's heads and steal from them and, you know, force the charity. My Lord, I don't think Jesus ever said that. So
I don't think so either. But I also think that, you know, people make up stuff on a regular basis.
True.
They can't figure it out or they don't know what it's really about. And so they do their best to try and explain it to themselves. And one of the problems with that is it then starts to kind of live like that's a reasonable conclusion, when in fact it was just an attempt to provide an explanation for something that is otherwise at the moment inexplicable.
Right.
And the biggest problem we have is, of course, recognizing which is which and what's actually running the show.
I know that you... we have the website Our Republic. Can you kind of see what direction we're going and possibly taking back the country, as people always say?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the things that happened was is that our Tea Party, we had a very, very active Tea Party. In 2010, we organized and made a 500,000 phone calls for candidates that we thought were good. By 2012, the various Tea Parties had all fought over anybody who was doing anything to the point where no calls got made. So we finally just gave up on trying to figure out who is the purest conservative in the world, who is the most righteous, I don't know, conservative in the world, etc., and decided, well, let's see, can we come up with a list of priorities that if we don't do something about immediately, all the rest of the posturing doesn't make any difference?
Sure.
And it turns out you can. It's pretty straightforward. The way that the current political climate got created is that for decades, people have been slowly, starting at the local level, electing people on various issue campaigns that have now become basically accepted as, yep, that's the right thing to do. So, for example, in my town, when somebody says, well, we're going to put in bike lanes and we're going to do traffic calming and reorganize streets and stuff, everyone goes, oh, that's wonderful. That'll make us kind of like Monterey, California. We can look like we're a town of the rich living with the rich, right? And it just gets pumped through like crazy. The problem is that slowing the cars down that way quadruples the amount of carbon per passenger mile. But the point is, nobody on our city council knows it.
Sure.
And even though we have a supposedly Republican mayor in Vista, she sits on the council, the Sandag Council, that has actually put this stuff together.
Yes.
I mean, I think if San Diegans really understood that if you got everyone together, like in the Charger Stadium, if you had everybody drive down there that has a car and let them look at that body of cars and said, do you know that the mayor of every town in San Diego has signed a document that says that half of the people who currently own cars have to get rid of them?
Yeah, it's I know. You told me that the other day when we were doing fellowship after service, and my jaw dropped. Of course, I haven't got the documents yet from you, which I'm hoping someday to get some of that from you.
I owe you it. It's the Sandag Regional Plan. But for anybody listening who's interested, you can go to SANDAG, Sandag.
Right.
Look it up. That's the Association of Incorporated Cities in the County.
Right. Okay.
And it's downloadable from the site. I'll send you yours, but it's downloadable from the site. The fun part is I have copies of this that I've downloaded over the last 5 years. And it's very interesting watching as people come up with substantive arguments against it. They suddenly say, and they just erase that part of the plan. Suddenly disappears. For example, the traffic calming used to have an explanation that it was there because the new high-density communities they were going to create were going to be essentially dehumanizing. So in order to make the environment, the living environment, palatable to people who actually live there, they wanted to do these things because they felt it would make the lifestyle easier to sell.
Right.
But, of course, that has been removed in the meantime.
Sure. So here's the other question on this part. I think I want to run this by you because it was – and Bill sent it to me by Facebook. He's in my chat room. He lives in Indiana. And so he sent this to me, and there was some gentleman who did a blurb talking about the effect of one huge volcanic eruption would negate several years of their ridiculous SUV calming. So, I mean, to me it sounds plausible. What I need to do is get a copy of that and print it out and send it to my idiotic city council. However, they don't care. This is my problem.
Is that we actually have we're in the process of calculating, and we actually calculated out for Vista.
Uh-huh.
And it comes out to $47,000 a year in cost to every single living citizen in our town.
Yeah.
The problem is that they don't see the cost directly. They pay it, but they don't see it directly. So one of the things that happens is part of it's lost opportunity cost. Very simple idea. You slow all the cars down. You reduce the distance you can drive in a given amount of time.
Sure.
If you own a small business in Center City Vista, that means the number of people who are within the drive time at lunch that would buy sandwiches from your sandwich shop has just been reduced. Yeah, but remember, it's by the area of the radius change, not just the radius change. So suddenly you have small businesses that close up, and the interesting thing is labor unions scream about Walmart, but in fact it was the environmental policy and the slowing down of traffic that caused the demise of these stores.
Okay.
So we actually have calculated that out using the government's own calculations, which they're kind enough to print, thinking they're making an irrefutable argument.
Of course. Oh, I know. Well, I mean, look, getting back to, we know kind of the origination of this stuff. We know about the Wildlands Project, the EPA, the Sierra Club, all these people, even the origins, some of the ancient origins of it. I know that Rosa Curie has written a book about that. But going back to trying to recreate the 1776 without bloodshed, how does this happen?
Well, there's three things you have to do, and you have to really remember. We got into this conversation because we were talking about the number of people that we've probably everybody in the audience has met, some people in the same state, who were concerned that they wanted to be in militias, and they were thinking, you know, there's going to be this big fight, yada, yada. Well, the problem is that the chances that our citizens are simply going to be able to engage the United States government that way is small, very small. And
well,
that's,
of course.
Well, yeah, I accept that. Remember, we have defeated some of the most powerful armies currently on the earth in, you know, 100 days. And that's because the tactics that if we ever got in a fight with the military would be so devastating, it would be the end of all contemplatable issues. So the first thing is I have to tell these people, you know, you really need to consider that if you're really that concerned about where we're going, that it is possible to win this without any of that kind of talk.
Okay.
And the less talk of that sort that's associated with anything you're realistically going to do means the larger the group of people you're going
you
to be able to talk to.
Absolutely. I get that. I mean, even on Glenn's show today, they were talking about the militarization of the police departments, and the one gentleman explained that this is a small entity. There's a problem with the idiotic government selling at huge discounted prices all this equipment that they're not using anymore to these police departments. And these are very tiny towns that, you know, want to ruffle their feathers and act like big shots, apparently, and say, oh, well, you know, and so that's what they're doing. Instead of selling it to private companies like the helicopters, et cetera, which would have made sense. So,
oh, yeah, except that,
you know,
for small towns, buying a new helicopter might be completely and totally out of the financial reality. But if you can pick up a well-maintained military helicopter, you might be able to get there.
Right. Well,
I don't have that many problems with that. I mean, you can ask who needs it. That's a realistic question.
Well, yeah. Okay.
But the next
question
is if you were a cop who every day has to walk up to cars never knowing whether he's going to get shot, just walking up to the window to find out, you know, do you have a license? Could I have the registration?
Okay, I get
think that
part,
I would be all in favor of as much help as I could get.
Well, what about the technology of the incredible vests that they have at this point?
Those incredible vests you can go through.
Got to have
to
be packing some
stuff. About it, but believe me. There is no form of armor that cannot be undone.
Well, yeah, if you got a grenade,
You just have to know what you're doing, and you have to know what you're facing.
Okay, but headshot. I mean, should that
work? Yeah, I can't talk. I'm just talking about a technical differentiation. There are actually types of rounds that you can use in very simple guns, which cause real problems for law enforcement in that sense.
Even with a giant vest?
Even with a giant vest.
Are you talking about the ones that expand, those new bullets that expand?
You're not going to give me the answer to the question. I'm sorry.
It was on the Internet. I don't care.
Here's one
of
the fun things. The only people who answer that question are people who don't know the answer.
Okay. Well,
because anybody that does know the answer is certainly not going to advertise to the detriment of the police, huh?
Precisely. Look, I'm probably on every list in the planet, you know,
oh,
DHS,
I doubt it.
Whatever.
I doubt
well,
it.
Well, whatever.
Now, the second that somebody claims they were inspired by you, I don't give you two hoots, you know, in a plug anything.
Exactly. I don't have, my audience is kind of, the reason I lost a couple of my listeners is some of them have back problems and they have to get up and move around and they're tired. So I get that. I would like actually tell everyone in the chat room to please call in and ask questions, do the Q&A. That was part of my show today. And while we're waiting for that, I wanted to go this incredible piece that you gave me, MSP Industry Alert on Obamacare.
Yep.
I read it cover to cover. I have told my people here, we're going to Indiana for a retreat this summer, which we've done. Now this is the third one. And I'm going to pack my suitcase with some extra pocket constitutions for all the newcomers, and I'm going to make copies of this and hand them out. This is incredible. My mother has promised to read this whole thing, at least the blue parts. But, I mean, it's like, concise, it's complete, it's amazing. It's terrifying what's happening.
Is that this is from a person inside the medical industry.
Right.
It's not actually an article. It's actually, he has a magazine that he sends to physicians all around the country because he is a big source of business intelligence. If you want to know how many people are going to buy instrument X next year, he's the guy who answers the question.
Okay.
So the funny thing about it is that when inside the industry they figure that they have to blow the horn on what's going on because it's so devastating.
Right. Yes, it is.
Then you know that some kind of change is almost guaranteed to occur, and it probably will not make the president very happy. Might make a few of the rest of us smile, though.
Yeah, a change is coming. Absolutely. I do welcome Mike or anyone to call in. Bill, you guys, FT, please call in because we were going to do questions and answers. And I think the other point was, the other one was the drones and the tracking of all car travel. That was another subject we were bantering about. And I just wanted people to know about this and what the it's under the auspices of saying drug dealers and all the rest of the war on drugs, and I don't care what they're calling it or why they're doing it. I don't think it's acceptable. It stinks.
Well, the fact is that the rumor mill basically.
Okay.
First of all, if you understand what drones really are. Drones aren't kind of like model airplanes. People have kind of the idea that they're very sophisticated model airplanes.
Okay.
Maybe with a camera and a remote control structure.
Right.
But they really aren't that. What they really are is something called a cooperative engagement device. And what that means is that when you have a group of them, you can cause the output of all of their sensors to be if you will, correlated with each other in real time. And what happens is that you can then discover through something called link analysis how various types of patterns occur. For example, if
right.
you were to look at, for example, just simply a given house, and you looked at a bunch of them, and you discovered that most people
sure.
have a fair to middling number of visits, you know, per week.
Sure.
But cars are always the same. And the time between those cars coming and going, for the large part, is the same. Now imagine that there's a house where everybody drives to it practically uniquely, don't come back for weeks at a time, but that the number of visits is high compared to the entire surrounding. And if you know that somebody doesn't have a legal business operating out of that piece of property, then the
sure.
conjecture is, why does this particular address have that kind of visit traffic happening?
Traffic.
Right. And
okay.
the assumption is that that is a fair indicator of, for example, a drug dealer.
Okay. Is this behavior by our government acceptable to you, just out of the blue?
Well, I personally think that it's a bad idea.
I think so, too.
And I think, here's the really terrifying thing. It may turn out to be necessary if, for example, we mess up Syria enough so that Al-Qaeda is reborn with a,
right.
you know, they've apparently got 50 to 100 Americans already tuned up and being trained in the fight there. There's a point at which trying to stop individuals is a real, real problem for any kind of group entrusted with our safety. You know,
okay,
guys
so,
like Bolton, the former UN ambassador.
Right.
I think today actually talked rather interestingly about the problems the Russians are having at the Olympics and their
oh.
efforts to try and find the four women.
Right. Now,
pardon me?
Okay. Whose idea was it to go to Sochi? Oh, my God.
The International Olympic Committee.
That was not smart. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. It's just the point is that the type of data that gets collected by things like PRISM on one side
yeah.
are very useful. And I wouldn't worry about it if the standard used to be that there was a limit on the type of oversight and there was a limit on the type of access to that kind of
sure.
information that was available to political people. There used to be a kind of, they call it in financial world, they call them Chinese walls. But what it basically
right.
means is you have one kind of activity on one side, another on the other, and never shall the two meet. In that case,
right.
I wouldn't have nearly as much a problem. But since the Obama administration has shown that
sure.
by light years indifference, and that doesn't mean that I necessarily think the GOP is a wonderful organization. But
not
compared
anymore.
To Democrats, they all look kind of like knights. Even Boehner
well,
was relatively positive.
Well, true, compared to like the Debbie Wasserman Schultz, yada, yada, and the Pelosi's. That woman belongs in a rubber room. I'm sorry.
Well, you know what her payoff was, right, for all that stuff? You know, the high-speed rail project in California is being done by her husband.
Oh, yeah.
The train
that no one
wants.
Sure.
This goes to nowhere anyone wants to go.
Yeah, the cronyism is beyond. I mean, I just...
Well, and therein lies the problem. Intelligence and the intelligence world is not a place where cronyism of any type has a play. Sooner or later,
right.
it simply causes either the country or its citizens or
sure.
its military their lives.
It does. I know Glenn talked about that today. He was touching on many subjects, but one was, quote, militarization of the police departments. I'm seeing stories everywhere, and this is not just from Facebook. This is other news outlets where, you know, they've got a freaking warrant, okay, signed by a judge, Why are they breaking down doors? Why can't they just serve the warrant, walk in peacefully without SWAT team, and look for something? That's what bothers us when they go nuts. They go beyond what they need to do. There's no reason for that level, especially for stolen stuff on a credit card. I mean, I can maybe understand if the guy's dripping blood off his hands, you know, out damn spot, and he's maybe, you know, but credit card? Are you kidding me?
I think the size of the police department is a fairer argument than the credit card. I'll tell you why. The people who really make money off of stolen credit cards are in organized crime. The kids are 17-year-old hackers in Russia.
Right.
But pretty soon they sell the address list they've pulled down. Of course, you don't even have to do it that much. You do realize that 93 million Americans have had their credit card information released to the wide criminal world by their hospital doctors.
Oh, my gosh.
I did that research for that guy at MSP.
Right.
We actually discovered that one-third of all Americans have had their credit information leaked by the healthcare industry.
Oh, it doesn't surprise me. Here's the problem I have with what happened in Iowa. You have a signed warrant.
Right.
Why can't you have four or five guys in regular uniform with warrant in hand, with whatever color paper it's on, ready at the ready, knock on the door, hand it to the person, and everybody's happy, search, don't find, leave, okay? Nobody's hurt, nobody's door's broken in, nobody's scared in the toilet with a legally owned holstered firearm, maybe ready to be shot because some stupid SWAT team. I mean, this is stupid. Why can't they just go the way it should be gone, the way everybody expects the law to be followed? I don't understand that.
Mostly because criminals no longer follow it.
Well, they never have.
Oh, yes,
they
did.
My God.
I tell you something. Criminal behavior in the United States is vastly more organized than it ever has been in the past. I mean, the greatest compassion for are everyday cops because they are caught. They have all kinds of rules that prevent them from protecting themselves. Relatively speaking, not the world's most world-beating equipment.
Okay, let me ask you. If we're going to infringe upon the Fourth Amendment or skirt around it, why not the Third? I mean, I'm sorry. I'm sick of it. I don't understand this. Everybody's terrified. Look at California. Look at those laws that Jerry Mussolini Brown just signed on the anti-gun front. And my brother-in-law was asking the question, why is this going on? I says, you better read up on Sacramento and your dear governor, because he's the one that signed them, and you live in a blue state. And he looked at me like I was speaking Greek. I says, well, you know, you got your AR-15. You better figure out what's going on in the state you live in. You like the
surfing? Well, the problem is he has his AR-15, which Pelosi and friends will describe as an assault rifle, when it's not.
You know what? I laugh at that because you ask a deer, what does he think a 30-06 is? I think he thinks it's an assault rifle. Come on. This is ridiculous.
We're talking about weapons when they're in automatic mode that fire hundreds and literally thousands of shells a minute.
Right.
And no one in California, unless they have built it themselves, if they're a good enough gunsmith to build it themselves, they could range it. But outside of that, most of the people that have those weapons, that buy those weapons, that get them, are basically using systems that you can fire as fast as you can pull the...
The bolt.
Or eject the shell. But the point is this. You've got 15 rounds. You can shoot maybe 10 a second, which is still phenomenal rate.
Sure.
But it's nothing
compared to
what that machine gun is really designed to do when it's operating and outfitted. with a receiver. Well, yeah, I mean, the parts you have to buy is the part that moves the shells around has to be replaced with the assault rifle version.
The only one I know that has one of those that you're speaking of is Ted Nugent, and he's in Texas. He said quite comically that his dog had to be fingerprinted before he could get this. I mean, he went through so many hoops. But he has it.
Well, look,
it's legal.
I used to have a 50 caliber that was very well put together.
Awesome.
And,
you know,
it became illegal in California while I owned it, and it was a bolt action. I mean, single-shot bolt action with a magazine of 5 shells.
Yeah, I know. What's weird to me is what my brother-in-law was saying, because he also has whatever he has. I'm not even going to start talking about it.
Exactly.
But,
that's a good idea not to enumerate.
Yeah, good. It's a really good idea. And he says, you know, you can buy these items, whether it's a 17-round magazine or a non-bullet button conforming thing or whatever. He says, you just can't get caught with it. You know, and I'm going, yeah, I know. The thing is, and I said, this is indicative in California. I said, there are other states that don't, you know, have these restrictions. So sometimes the 10th Amendment does prevail, and when you move around, you get more freedom. You know what I mean?
Yep.
The further away you go. Hi, Cal Living. Welcome to the show. And, guys, please call in. I've got 38 minutes left. I want your calls, your input, your questions on everything with the California water stuff. There's huge stuff going on. They're still talking about the Delta smelt situation.
Well,
which,
here's what you really need to know about the Delta smelt. They finally found the cause of their disappearance. And it turns out it's largemouth bass.
Oh my gosh.
Constantly stocking the rivers and lakes for anglers with largemouth bass, which turn out to be rapacious smelt eaters. Turns out the pumps have nothing to do with their decreases. And as you pointed out, in Northern California, the amount of water is so profound that they literally, in most places, don't meter, have fixed rates, or have water rates that are so much lower than they are in arid Southern California.
Sure.
But that the fight over who owns the water and, you know, why should we send our water to Southern California? And they literally say that. I mean, that quote you tried to get me to evoke, I suddenly realized what you were trying to do. There was a protest up in Sacramento in August 2009 about the shutdown.
Yes.
And I went up there because I just planted trees and was told that there would never again be agricultural water.
Oh, my gosh.
In Southern California. And so I went up there to see what was happening, and the political aide to one of the senators said to me, as he was kind of interested to see what a water protester would be like, so he came over and talked to me. And I said, well, I'm really interested in knowing how you guys view this. And he said, well, we won. I said, what? And he said, well, we won. Northern California, we won. This fight's been going on for more than 100 years, and we finally won it.
Oh, my gosh.
You guys got to figure it out on your own.
Right.
Oh, but we get to pay for the Delta Project
them. It's horrible. I do have another caller on the line, and I believe this is my friend Bill from Indiana, and thank you for calling. Let's bring you in. Hi, babe.
Hi, girl. Oh, I watched the Senate today when they were talking about the battle over the water rights there in California. And it was really, I mean, you've got California going against California there, and kind of we're sitting back and watching. But while we was watching that, there's something else that happened. Obama's going to designate climate hubs.
Yes, I heard this.
Okay, did you look at the map when they stuck them up?
No, I didn't.
Is it a designated climate zone?
If you do, they will match up to what was called regions on the Agenda 21 map.
Right.
So here we are, Agenda 21, right in our faces.
Oh, absolutely. He is a major seller of that, and he has reaped huge support from the environmental community.
Yes.
Well,
and in part done that by, in the way he's done that with every possible constituency, by lying to them kind of unrestrainedly.
Yeah, I think almost every time he opens his mouth, except when he exposes the truth and exposes who he really is, you know, takes the mask off, he's pathological from what I'm looking at. So, I don't know. He perpetuates it, whether it's Benghazi or Obamacare, it doesn't matter, or climate change, redistribution, MIRAs. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I'm dumbfounded with this craziness.
Actually, the climate hub, you know, if you really are sarcastic, the climate hub idea is, it's very clear that at some point, farm subsidies in their current form are going to have to be curtailed. And the farm communities are very, very, very concerned about how they will deal with the vagaries of weather, et cetera, in terms of survival. So the interesting thing is that, let's see, which is this? This is the New York Times this morning.
Okay.
Described these hubs as a out-and-out attempt to simply buy support for his environmental program among farmers who are, oh yeah, the most conservative of his opponents.
Wow. Hey, you know, I think my question, just to open this up a little bit, is I understand that we can't just, like, flip a switch and turn it all off because there would be a lot of chaos and devastation. But I am so sick of this overbloated, bureaucratic, Lilliputian government and this iron-fisted crap that comes out of it because of the abuses. How do you combat this Leviathan? I'm sick of it. Both sides, both of them.
Well, you know, he was talking about the farm bill there and the things inside of that. But at the same time, as if we were paying attention, we'd see that they're trying to stomp us out from growing our own garden.
Oh, yeah, it's actually illegal.
Not in my house. I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah, but there's actually, it's called the Quality Food Act that he had passed. And it actually makes any food that you grow in your house, you're not allowed to feed it to any other people.
Well, you are, you see.
Well, I know, but I mean, but that's how crazy they are.
I will not comply, deal. Go ahead, Bill.
If you can control all the food and you can control the water, well, you're going to control the people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's looking like. They're working towards these things. You've heard me talk several times about the beginnings of Agenda 21 and George Bush, you're bringing it up, and then Clinton taking it, you know, further, and George G.W. taking it even further, and Obama was supposed to come in and finalize this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Hey, the Bushes are the people that created this.
He's doing it. While we're focused on other areas, he's behind the back with the ink pen doing this.
The fundamental problem is that the people in Washington have no idea how they should react or could react. It's really a funny thing. They all go to the same cocktail parties, drink the same martinis,
yep,
with the same people, both for and against their political ideas, and they end up in this kind of newspeak where they all agree on the methodology and lose their ability to actually think about what we need to do.
I'd like to bring in Mikey from the hot seat. Mikey, welcome to the show.
Hey, Linda, how are you?
Fine. Go ahead.
Hello, everybody. Bill, I'm glad to hear your voice. You sound good.
Thank God.
I feel pretty good.
Good. Excellent.
Oh, Ken, this is the gentleman I was praying for in church, Bill from Indiana. He's the first one you spoke to.
Well, God bless you, Bill, and we're praying for you.
Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Go ahead, Mikey.
Yeah,
you had a question? Or
Well, I heard something previously about a bloodless 1776. Am I right about that?
Yep.
And who believes that?
Well, I for one am working pretty hard on it. We built a series of voter tools. The last 17 election. Just let me finish the sentence.
Yeah,
before
hang
you.
On. Sure. Let him go.
Sure.
We have actually won 17 elections in a row. We reverse engineered the kinds of tools they're using, and it turns out you can beat these guys one for one in elections. And you can beat them without their money and without their other structures, but you do need volunteers.
Yep.
Now, whether you believe in use of Clausewitzian force, which is the bloodied 1776 version, or you believe in that our republic still has the ability to be turned from within, either way, the key issue is how many Americans, actual American citizens, fall into each camp. And the fact is to win either one, you will nonetheless at some point have to win the hearts and minds of the people, or you're just the next dictator.
Well, I agree with that part, because there is a lot of fascism going around, and you mentioned that, and I think Glenn Beck's mentioned it, and so has Ron Golden, my buddy from Georgia, who's somewhere with his family right now. But I understand, Mikey, but...
Well, no, I didn't say anything yet. There's nothing to understand for me. I didn't say anything yet.
With the election system, the way that it is, there's no way to guarantee that anybody can win anything.
Actually, I think that if anybody studied the tactics of the U.S. military, if anybody gets out there and actually wants to duke it out with a kill box, it would be make more sense if you just went someplace and isolated yourself permanently, because believe me,
You're way undermining the American ingenuity.
No, I'm not. I think it's very ingenious to actually take control of our country without having to shoot our countrymen.
You know, the guy who invented that ain't even a soldier.
Linda, you're the host. You let me know when I can get a word in.
Okay. Hang on. Let's take this one at a time.
Everybody else is talking. I haven't had my shot yet.
I'm sorry. Let me do this real quick. Ken's talking about me and you and the little militia in South Carolina, which I won't name the guy that I talked to, they're no match for a real military. Now there's the question, who are the Oath Keepers and what percentage are going to actually fire on us? Well, I don't know if I'm willing to like get into that mix. And I think what Mike was saying the other day, if I'm correct, is that the first wave of garbage is not going to be against them. It's going to be against citizens trying to come and steal your food and ransack your house and go nuts because they haven't got water and no food stamps. So go ahead, Mike.
Oh, well, I'd rather speak for me. I appreciate that, Linda. And, you know, and I appreciate that, you know, 17 elections have been won and all that other good stuff. But now I'm going to lay a little dose of reality for you. I am a student of history, and unless anyone can name me a time where a tyrannical government woke up one morning and said, hey, you know what? I've had an epiphany. I've been wrong. I'm going to do the right thing from now on. I don't think that's ever happened, and I don't think there's ever been a passive revolution that ever turned around and stopped a tyrannical, illegal government. So for me, I appreciate your election wins, but that's nothing. They're allowing you to have that. There has never been a bloodless revolution since man found pen and paper. So let's have that established. And Linda did allude to a point, because I will tell you, Ken, is it Ken? Yeah.
Yes.
I'll tell you how it's going to go. I'll tell you exactly how it's going to go. First, the money's going to get cut off. The food's going to get cut off. We're going to fight each other in the streets. So it's going to be preppers versus the disillusioned. Then the government's going to come in, and it's going to mop up what's ever left as the casualties get high. And who's ever deemed as useful will be put into camps and will serve the mighty. And whoever is not viable for society will be eliminated. Because that's one of the tenets of the secular humanists. This grand war is inevitable. This grand war will take place. You have my guarantee. So my message on my show from now on is, let's try to reach out to as many people as we can to prepare. Now, what is preparation? Well, preparation is, you know, you're going to need something for barter. So we have established that gold and silver are basically the universal currencies. You're going to have to learn to grow vegetables for yourself, because, I mean, you can't have livestock on your land unless you have a certain amount, and then, of course, you get regulated up your butt. But so far, you can have vegetation. And then, without mentioning particulars, you have to have articles of things to defend your home, if you will. This has to take place. This will take place, and quite frankly, the sooner that we collapse the system, the quicker that we rebuild. So I enjoy your election wins. I'm telling you, they're letting you have them. And the Illuminati, the globalists, the elite, the bankers, give them what name you want. They will allow you to go so far. They will not let go without blood in the streets. Thank you. Linda,
thanks, Mikey.
Ken,
thank you so much. Ken, would you like to rebut that, please?
Sure. Three things. I'm glad you're a student of history, and I mean that. Secondly, there are any number of examples of times when people believed they were dealing with tyrannical governments when they weren't.
Tyrants.
And one of the issues will certainly be that the loss of civil order, if it happens, could come from any one of a number of outcomes, including civil unrest, but we can do two things. First of all, there's COIN. You know about the COIN documents, I assume.
Care to elaborate for all of us?
Oh, yeah, sure, okay. So the moniker in the U.S. government's terms about counterinsurgency and
right.
counterinsurgency defense, that is their plans for what would happen if there was a general uprising in the U.S.,
right.
you can actually download. The interesting thing about it is it will explain a very, very large number of the things that are probably worrying people in terms of preparation.
Mm-hmm.
A second thing that's useful to read is if you look at the threat assessment, I guess it was from 2 years ago, on EMP attacks.
Yes,
an EMP
electromagnetic
attack would have much
right.
the same kind
effect.
Of disruption that I believe you were talking about, where the
right.
fundamental threat to you and your family comes from
mm-hmm.
the fact that a very large indigenous population would suddenly
yeah.
have all forms of life support, if you will, removed so that they didn't have water or food or transportation, etc. And the current U.S. estimates are that 80% of the U.S. population would be killed by other members of our population. And that's one of their own estimates. So I'm not probably naive at all about the issue of the dangers in a
right.
destabilized society.
I think what
when
the,
I study,
the major... Go ahead.
May I retort?
Sure.
Okay. In the beginning of your point here, You said that people thought they were facing a tyrannical government and then realized that they weren't. So I ask you, are you saying that we're not under a tyrannical government? Is that your stance?
It depends. What do you mean by tyrannical government?
Well, when a tyrannical government strips you of your rights, when a tyrannical government strips you of your identity, and basically is purposefully stripping you of your wealth, of your God-given rights, I think that qualifies as a tyrannical, illegal government.
Well, I probably disagree with you in the degree to which that has happened. And that's a fundamental difference in opinion and assumption.
All right.
I don't say that it's not happening, but I don't believe that it's happening at the rate that some people believe it is. Mostly because I see probably the largest current political organization in the United States actually turns out to be one of the Tea Party groups.
Right.
Well, you know, some people that have had family members disappear, when other people that have had their military in the family stripped of their rights, I think they would beg to differ with your stance about being there already. I mean, what do you need? Do you need the SWAT team to come to your door to prove it? I mean, what do you need? Do you need your rights or what you have directly stripped from you to get the message? I mean, just because you haven't been affected directly yet by NDAA, the Patriot Act, so on and so forth.
How do you know that? I really love your assumptions.
No, I'm asking. No, I asked. I said maybe you haven't. I said, do you need that to happen to you?
No, it already has.
Well, then you're contradicting yourself.
No.
How could you say that this is not a tyrannical,
illegal
government?
Do.
Well, I don't see how you can.
You don't see how you can, but I do. But here's the bottom line. I agree with you, and just as committed as anybody listening to the preservation of our rights. I don't know if you realize it, but everybody who has ever had a secret clearance signs away on the last page, along where they add their addendum of all the sins against the common good that you've already committed. And what you lose are your Bill of Rights. There was a period where I was overseas someplace, and I had to actually sign a contract that if my country and the place where I was ever got in a political snit fit, that either one of them could put me in jail for as long as they'd like without habeas corpus or anything else until they decided to declare the snit fit over. So I doubt that you have very many people that have had a greater change to their constitutional rights than that.
Well,
but you okay? That's
I think
what,
you're just validating my argument. And maybe the Jews should have gotten
point.
It a little earlier before they were put on trains and shipped into ovens. So, I mean, I'm going to assume that this is a tyrannical, illegal government because I'm not waiting until I'm in District 12. So, I mean, you know, whatever. But
I think I understand what Ken is saying because, Ken, you signed something. You were under contract.
Oh, yeah,
I had
whatever causes you to sign the National Security Act, yeah.
Right, so that's a contract, okay? Do you remember, Mikey, and I'm not trying to be mean to you because I respect you very much, what Ron was saying the other day about being under contract and signing away your rights and signing W-4 forms, et cetera, and complying with all this crap and not even knowing what the laws are? That's the distinction I think Ken's trying to make. And I know where you're going because
I think Ken knew what he was signing. Wait a minute. But we did not. We have been purposely lied to by every employer that made us sign the W-4 form. Because you cannot get a job unless the employer, which is like, one out of God knows what, refuses to be, you know, a tax collector for
exactly.
the federal government. Well, all right then.
Yeah.
So you know, it's either you sign that W-4 form under false pretenses, or you don't get a job and you live under a bridge. Well, if you want to make that choice, well, Linda, it's reality. So we've been purposely deceived. So there is a big difference between Ken signing a document that he absolutely knew what it was. He had the choice to say no.
Once
read
again, you assume that I had any idea. I had no idea what living without
Senate right, okay,
amendments
but you signed,
would look like.
All right, but
me.
You signed some sort of a clearance, security clearance deal. So, I mean, you have to assume there's some sort of a forfeiture, whether it's a teeny-weeny one or it's a giant one. But we signing W-4 forms under false pretenses because we've been lied to and led to believe that's not what we're supposed to do, I think that's a different ballgame.
Well, okay. Maybe we're talking apples and oranges here, and I kind of get both sides because I know where Ken's coming from. You know, he happened to be in the position he was in, and he made a choice, and that's where he went to live and work, et cetera.
Right,
and
then.
He understands habeas corpus. He understands the Bill of Rights as well as you and I and Ron do. So, and I get what you're saying, Mikey.
I think might be a help, Linda.
Yes.
Is the fact that one thing that hasn't been said, which I should say, is I believe that the Obama administration has fundamentally changed the relationship of citizens to their government. Bush started it. That's
right.
True. But having said that, every president since FDR, since it was the United States that actually tried to create supernatural law,
mm-hmm.
at the UN. I mean, we're the people who made them decide to pass the International Covenant on Human Rights, etc.
Sure.
And for some strange reason, which I truly can't defend nor can I even understand, we thought that having 120 nations, 80 of which are run by dictatorships, would provide a true, you know, representative vote on what should be in a document of human rights. So I agree with you about that. And the supranational law movement is a cloak for almost everything that
mm-hmm.
undoes and denies the fundamental principles of our republic.
And the Constitution and the Declaration.
Well, that's
yeah,
what I mean. Our republic
is
created by its Constitution. It has no other
right.
existence. That's why you pledge your allegiance to it. Oh, and by the way, I'm an oath keeper.
Yay, me too. Remember, we were at that meeting together, and I got to sit next to John Lopey.
Yep.
Much
I'm
of the chagrin,
time
the fact that
Sheriff
his
Mack.
Wife was there, too. Oh, Sheriff Mack was one of the speakers, and so was Lopey. Bill, I was so happy. Ken and I went. His wife went. Jeff Schwilk, who's a champion of fighting against illegal immigrants.
Oh, he's one of the founders of the Minutemen.
Cool.
Did you know that?
Yeah, that's right. And we're going back about 4 years. Yeah, absolutely.
More than that. He was there in the very, very, very beginning of the immigration fight.
Yeah. And my friend Bill has been fighting all that stuff for years. He's been learning about Agenda 21 and fighting in his state of Indiana against illegal immigration.
May I?
Yes. Go ahead.
Who was the Oath Keeper?
Ken
is the
Oath Keeper.
Well, why do you feel you need to? What is an oath keeper?
Go ahead, explain.
Well, it's simple. People that have sworn to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies, foreign and domestic.
Right.
Under our current counterinsurgency rules, could conceivably be ordered to fire on Americans.
Okay. So, who, in your opinion? Or the foreign and domestic enemies in 2014?
Well, that's actually a very interesting question. I guess the determinant is the allegiance involved. It's not the physical or papered citizenship or membership.
Well,
since we have American citizens currently being trained in Syria to attack the United States.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
well,
you've established
foreign. I ask you to establish domestic.
The method of what? Of not
who's
carrying
our domestic
out the
enemy? Who is our domestic enemy that you have to defend, that you have to keep an oath
against,
to the Constitution? Who is a domestic enemy?
Everybody who's been in the military or in an enforcement role has for sure sworn that oath. But so do firefighters and a number of other groups as well.
And notary public,
the issue becomes that under one of several scenarios, but one scenario is martial law, that each person who has ever had that background is mustered into a kind of temporary active duty.
So then everyone's
under that scenario, you really do have a tyrannical structure because it is martial law.
But my question is, I still have not heard an established domestic enemy. What I've heard is that you're telling me everyone takes an oath. So everyone's an oath keeper that takes an oath. Right up to Barry Suratoro. He's an oath.
No, there is a movement called.
Well, he took an oath.
No, but you're that's. Sorry, but there actually is a movement called the Oath Keepers. It's military and people from enforcement that have sworn that under any circumstances that they will not automatically fire on American citizens, period. If you tell me to go down, downtown and control the street, yada, yada, yada.
Okay, very good. So who would give the order to fire on Americans?
Well, under martial law, it can be political people, it can be military people, it can be civilian political people, it can be the President of the United States.
Mm. Well, absolutely. Since technically we've been under martial law since, 1861, I believe, never been rescinded?
Oh, the Libra Code, absolutely.
So wouldn't you say, and really there's no cause, to be under perpetual martial law. So by that very instance, aren't we being governed by a tyrannical government?
So are you talking about the martial law called by Lincoln during the Civil War?
Lincoln.
Correct.
Yeah, Labor Code.
Could I ask a question here?
Go ahead, Bill.
Would you not consider any government, not just talking about the current, but those in the past even, that have worked to hand us over to a global elite, would you not call that a tyrannical government?
I would, Bill.
It depends what you believe about global elites.
Oh. I think
all
they're
right.
Evil.
Bill, why don't you tell us?
I fully acknowledge that
on.
There are global elites, but the interesting thing is the ones that I have seen that we should probably be most worried about are not the popular ones in American to some degree conspiratorial theory. And there are conspiracies. I'm not saying there aren't.
Okay, so who are the global elitists that we should be worried about as opposed to...
Well, I think that the one world government guys ought to get real focused about the caliphate.
The
who?
The caliphate.
You mean the
Arab? The caliphate.
Well, it's actually in their language, caliphate, but it doesn't matter.
The Arabs.
Well,
the
bottom
line
is people
who
believe
the Arabs, Ken?
In Islamic prophecy believe that the entire world is going to end up in one world government run by an imam
who
is called the caliphate.
Who is funding them?
The Saudis
who's
in
funding
particular
the
are the single largest funder.
Who's funding the Saudis?
We are through our
Thank
every you. Gallon of gas
Thank
we buy.
You've just established my case. Now, how
no,
did
I
you
haven't.
You have.
I've established the fact that our energy policy has made a group of idiots in the Middle East the richest people on the planet.
Ken,
but it has nothing to do with, for example, an old banking power conspiracy.
Oh,
it has nothing to do with the Illuminati. It has nothing to do with the Bank of England, depending which.
You said the caliphate are the ones we need to be concerned about. Then I asked you who's funding it, and you said the United States of America.
No, you got to finish the sentence.
Play back the tape, man.
No, but you actually ought to do is quote me correctly. What I said was, is we have funded it through buying gasoline.
And you went.
But what? Okay, that's the petrodollar agreement. That goes back to the what?
The Bush
after Brett
Scott. Come on, you just established what I've just said.
No, I haven't.
You have. The people behind the caliphate who's funding them is the global elitist. You just said
it's
it.
You and I and every other dumb bunny who has to buy gasoline for their car.
Mercy. Who set up Saudi Arabia? Who set them
we
up?
We did. We
America.
Did.
You think? Thank you.
The Red Line Agreement.
Thank you. It all comes back to the British Crown and its satellite colony, the new United States of America.
Okay, the year of the Rush follower, I got it.
Just established.
You know, in actual fact, the Saudi part that funds the caliphate has nothing to do with what you just talked about. It has to do with an agreement between Fahd and the imams in Mecca at the end of the British occupancy.
Who runs the Saudi banks?
Well, the point is that they don't
not?
Run, the Saudi banks don't run that Islamic movement. In fact, it's the other way around.
There's no World Bank
cut a deal with the imams wanted to create a nation state around Mecca, much like the Vatican. And he refused. They then threatened him with eternal unrest. And he cut a deal with them. And the deal he cut is that Saudi Arabia funds all activities by the Wahhabists in the domain of training religious forming of Muslims throughout the entire world. And that money comes automatically to them, not manipulated by the banks. It comes right out of the family treasury. And is primarily how the violent end of Islam has been funded and established all around the world.
Who's allowing this establishment? Who's allowing the Muslims to be established?
The Saudi government is primarily...
Oh, so the Saudi government is dictating to the British government? You really believe that?
Do you think the British government dictates to anyone?
The British government is allowing the Muslims to overrun their country.
Yeah, so
and in about
so what?
Oh, dude.
It doesn't have anything to do with their being British.
Oh,
it has
man,
to do with
dude.
Their ideas about social equality.
The Muslims,
it's multiculturalism.
The Muslims
yes.
are able... Exactly, and who's behind the multiculturalism? The global bankers.
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay, all right. You know, okay, Linda, I'm done here.
Okay, Mikey, thanks a lot, babe.
You're seeing the same kind of push here where they're trying to destroy this culture, and they're doing that using the Muslims that they're bringing over as asylum seekers. And
absolutely. All that's true.
They're using the illegal aliens. But in the end, when they start their world depopulation, and 6 billion people got to go, but it's not going to be a pretty sight. And that's the agenda.
Okay. I got 90 seconds left, so I'm going to wrap it up in a sec.
Well, I would welcome further discussion, let's put it that way. And I would welcome, if I'm wrong, to be set right.
Okay, yeah, look, I'll tell you what.
And that's
What I'm going to do is invite Ken, my good friend, I'd love to have you debate a very, very non-hot-headed person, my friend Ron from Georgia, who has been studying the monetary policy systems in the world for a very, very long time.
Well,
so,
it's interesting. I help devise ways of policing them. So we probably have a very interesting conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bill,
I'll probably
thank
be the only person he's talked to in a long time that actually knows what the Bank of International Settlements is.
Yes. Anyway, I want to thank you, Ken, so much. I've got like 30 seconds. Bill, take care. Doctor's orders. God bless you, Ken. God bless you, Bill. Everybody,
God bless
Calvin
you
guys.
Bye-bye.
Everybody. Thanks so much. You guys, tune in tomorrow for Mike from the Hot Seat. Those who understand that he's a little passionate, I get it. I'm going to go have a conversation with him in a minute. Everybody else, Bill, Yo, Jolene, everybody up there, Chad, all y'all guys, God bless. And we're done.
God bless.
God bless.